This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Well, hello. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another spooky, haunted episode of America's favorite haunted comedy food history podcast, Life's a Banquet. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, I thought I'd change the format of our show to being more haunted. Is that okay with you?
That's the same format that we've always had.
Okay. It's edible, it's spreadable, it's pourable. I'm Zara, the hatchet master, Tangora. Hello. Who art thou?
And I'm Nicole.
Are you haunted in any way?
I'm haunted.
Wait, I hear myself. I just heard my own screams in your headphones.
You're screaming really loud, that's why.
Probably. Or it's my ghost. Anyway, I'm sorry. How are you haunted? Please share with the group.
I don't know. I'm not haunted.
Oh, okay. Well, this is America's spookiest podcast with one haunted host and one non-haunted host. I'm losing it. I'm losing it, buddy. What's happening with you?
Nothing.
Oh, okay.
Well, as usual, in the suburbs, like, without a car, not a lot goes on here.
That's rough. That's rough. Have you gotten anything thrown at you while you're walking down the street?
No.
I had a friend in high school once. Well, I had something that I wanted to say, so it's just... I had a friend in high school once who was walking down the street, and somebody threw a freaking banana milk at his face, and it, like, ruptured his eye, and his, like, eye almost fell out.
What's a banana milk?
Like a banana quick.
Ew.
I mean, yeah, it's terrible on all fronts. Like, if you're going to lose an eye, to lose it to a banana milk of all things is just... I actually used to like banana milk, if we really want to be honest here. And why shouldn't we be?
I've never heard of this before, a banana milk.
Really? Have you heard of strawberry milk?
I feel like I know that Nesquik made a strawberry milk, but I never, it was more like a Yoo-hoo thing for me, my life cycle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Strawberry Yoo-hoo was a thing, right?
I don't think so. Didn't they just have chocolate?
No. Mm-mm. There was definitely more kinds of Yoo-hoo. Yeah.
Yoo-hoo is gross. I don't know.
Yoo-hoo is whack. It's the worst of all the chocolatey drinks. Sorry, Yoo-hoo. We will still take you as a sponsor.
I don't think they make
Pay
it.
Pay us
Do
to
they
change your
it?
Opinion. Do they make
it's
you
like
still?
Mellow Yellow. I thought they'd stop making it, but apparently it still exists.
I'm not sure. You know what is really gross also, while we're on the topic of just hating? Obviously, I've quit my no complaining thing. Suddenly, this podcast brings out the worst in me. Is Bosco? Are you familiar with Bosco?
Isn't that like a TV show?
No,
by
no.
An elderly man who fights crime or something?
You're thinking of Columbo.
No, it's new, it's present day. It's like a white-haired man who is like, an actor that we would recognize but don't know his name.
Oh, really? No, I have not heard of that, but...
Hold on, let me see if this is called Bosco.
I wonder if it's sponsored by Bosco. Maybe they're trying to bring Bosco back. Bosco was like, a powder
It's a musical group also, just so you know.
pardon all of us. Bosco was like a kind of... Nestle Quick knockoff that was not as delicious. I have a similar memory of Bosco as I do of Carob, calling back to last week's show, something I'm angry about, all kinds of fake chocolate that I don't like. You know what I do like? Rolos.
I don't like Rolos. Okay, Bosco is not the show I was thinking of, but it is a slightly terrifying children's television series from 91. Featuring a clown-like guy who's pretty spooky.
See, this is a haunted podcast.
From the 70s.
Yep, creepy.
Yeah, he would be. He's kind of creepy. You should put him on our Instagram for the podcast this week because
I will.
No one will know what the hell we're talking about. Yep, so it's a powdered drink mix.
Powdered, or I believe there was a Bosco syrup as well. It was also featured in a Seinfeld episode. It's not.
This is
good.
Vaguely familiar. It's like probably it's more like a 70s thing.
Yes, of when I was a small child in the early 1970s. I used to do. I'm assuming you're the same way because I've heard you speak a lot about Crystal Light, but I was a real fan of like powdered drink things that you would mix into a liquid and then all of a sudden, bing, bang, boom, you have a drink.
Yeah, in my high school, I guess this is middle school, but people would take little baggies of Kool-Aid and like sell them to kids to eat with your finger during class because, you know, it's already pre-sweetened.
Yeah.
And so they got in trouble for like selling stuff in school, even though it was Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Don't eat the Kool-Aid or drink the Kool-Aid. As we know from our Jonestown.
Just weird that they got in trouble, I guess, for like selling stuff, but they're just selling a harmless powder.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
well,
what
maybe
kind
not
of
harmless.
Trouble?
They got in trouble for, like, selling shit on school. Like, they were selling drugs, but it was cool.
No, I feel you, but, like, I'm wondering about what was the punishment. Like, did they go to federal prison? Like, what happened?
I mean, they're white kids, so probably not a lot.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I was a good Christian child, so I didn't participate in that.
Right, of course.
Also, I didn't have a lot of spare cash in middle school. I wasn't like, yo, give me some of that Kool-Aid.
Sure. Where do you even get money in middle school? I mean, I guess if you have rich parents,
lunch.
They give you money.
You get lunch money.
Did you ever snort, like, pixie sticks?
I don't know if I snorted them. I think I might have made my sister snort them. I can't remember.
I definitely did. And I think I mentioned a couple weeks ago that I took shots of Sprite. I've been, I guess, a lover of drugs and alcohol since a very young age. Just trying to do it in whatever form possible. I don't do drugs anymore, obviously. Well, maybe not obviously. I don't do drugs anymore, just in case my mom's listening. But definitely still take shots of Sprite.
Doesn't it hurt your nose to snort pixie sticks?
Well, when I was doing it last night, it didn't. But I don't know. I don't remember. I did always love powders, though, come to think of it. I loved Fun Dip. I loved
Fun Dip
the,
is cool.
Like, the iced tea powder that I would totally like dunk my fingy in, my phalanges, and then lick the powder off and then put my dirty finger back in, which, you know, you just can't do anymore because of the coronas. But
if you live alone, you can.
That's true. I do dip my fingers into most of my food in my house. I like rarely use a plate or a utensil. I was just eating salsa out of the jar moments ago.
With your hands?
Yeah, I was just eating fistfuls of salsa. No, I was just taking like a chip and dunking it right into the jar, but it was like a really skinny jar, so I had to break the chips into fragments to get them in there.
Oh yeah,
this is why
we've
I'm single
been there. I think that's a common American experience.
So what I do is I take the chips and I crush them in the palm of my hand, I put them in my mouth, and then I pour the salsa into my mouth and just make a perfect bite in my mouth.
I crush them in my hand and then pour the salsa into my hand and then slurp it up.
Like someone who's drinking water from a pond after like days of thirst being lost in the woods.
Yeah, which I don't recommend. It's dangerous. Unless you have one of those straws that kills all the amoebas or whatever.
I was listening to some of our old podcasts today. Just to like, you know, as
get
I was
in the mood.
Yeah, as I was looking in the mirror and masturbating and was listening to my own podcast. I don't know why I did it, but I did. And there was one that you were, when we were talking about infomercials and you were mentioning like the invention that was a golf club that you pee into.
Oh, yeah.
LOL'd all over Court Street.
American ingenuity.
Yeah, it was funny. What have you been cooking? Anything good?
What?
Have you been cooking anything good for your family?
No, I took this. I don't go to the store or anything because I don't have a car, so I'm kind of trapped here. Mm. So I'm at the whim of my parents. But yesterday we made this thing. There's like a salad came in a bag, including the chicken. There's like grilled chicken and avocado salad dressing and tortilla strips and lettuce all together in a bag, and like cabbage. It was good.
Wow. That's very, I mean, that I've not ever seen the meat in the bag, but like,
me either.
It makes sense to so you put just it all like, in a bag.
Go to the store, you come home and you open up a bag and dinner's served.
Dinner Voila. Is served. And dinner is served. That sounds very easy and delicious.
It was good.
Cool. Yum.
Then I talked to my friend on the phone for many hours yesterday, drinking Crystal Light and vodka.
Oh, excuse, j'excuse. What friend?
None of your business.
All of us want to know who your other friend is.
My friend Mike, my sweet friend Mike Sala.
Oh, Mike. Hey, I don't know you. That's cool. What have I made? I like had a bunch of shit in my fridge as per usual that I did not utilize during the week. And so yesterday I made a bean salad and I brought it to the beach with my cousibo. It was good. There was some beans, some chickpeas. There was fresh mozzarella and cucumbers and scallions. It was delicious. Some lemon, some EVOO, as my hero Rachel Ray would say. And we went to the beach. We brought a baguette. And then I wanted to mention to you when you come back. Now, I understand that the trope of
we brought a baguette.
Like, I got a baguette. Yeah, I baguette about it. I mm-hmm. said, hey, I need to baguette about it. And I purchased une baguette, brought it to the beach with this delicious salad and some salami that I had left over from a party, and we made a meal of it. And then, this is what I really want to tell you and all our listeners, is that we visited a soft serve ice cream place that's apparently been around for generations, Mom and Pop, in Long Beach after we left Robert Moses. We took a little cruise down to Long Beach and got soft serve ice cream from this place called Marvel. It's like, I don't know if it's supposed to be a knockoff Carvel or if Carvel knocked off Marvel. I don't really have the time to look too much into this feud.
It's not Marvel?
Well, I think it's pronounced Marvel, according to our friend Dan, who took me there for the first time. They said it's Marvel. And we even made a song about it that goes, Marvel, 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 Marvel.
Not a lot of lyrics.
No, but the artistry's in the composition of the same word. So listen, that's not
the proof is in the pudding.
The proof is in the soft serve, bitch, because they have fucking pistachio soft serve and strawberry soft serve, and you can get them in a swirl.
That's tight.
Yo, I'd never had pistachio soft serve until I went with Dan, and then yesterday I went for a strawberry soft serve with rainbow sprinkles, and it was like, what a delight. I loved it. Every lick.
You mixed them together?
No, I didn't mix them, but next time I think I might. Although, they also have coffee soft serve, which really speaks to me. So I might go for coffee with chocolate sprinkles or coffee with like little crushed Oreo bits.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, dude. It really was cool.
You know, the color combo of pistachio and strawberry would be very Instagrammable.
Right.
I'm picturing the strawberry as like a millennial pink, but I don't really know because I wasn't there.
It is millennial pink, but this place is not full of people who are taking pictures of their ice cream. These are real, legit Long Islanders who are.
No, I'm just giving you social media advice. I'm like your social media manager.
Right. Because I'm totally the kind of person who takes a picture of my drippy ice cream cone in my hand. I'd rather die.
I'm not really a cone gal, as they say.
I know. We don't have this in common.
Also, the dripping is part of the reason. Like, come on.
Right. Well, I have always said that I pick, like, I will know if I'm going to get ice cream with a guy because I go get ice cream on all my dates, on all my first dates that I go on. but if you go get ice cream with a dude and he, or like, a partner of any sex or gender, for me, a dude, a great cis white male with lots of toxic energy, and they get a ice cream cup, I say that's the biggest red flag for me.
Why? Because they don't want to get ice cream all over their hands?
It means they're probably not very good at eating pussy, in my mind.
I don't think that's true.
If you want to eat out of a cup, I mean, you really want to get into the, you want a man who eats ice cream out of a cone. You want a partner who eats ice cream out of a cone.
No.
Yeah. Trust me. Trust me on this one. I have great taste in men. Trust me on this one. I have great taste in men. I always find really nice boyfriends. And so take it from me, folks. Anything I say about finding a mate is accurate. Anyway, moving on. Should we get into our topic or what? What do you think?
No.
I don't even remember what it is.
Let's keep talking more shit.
You want to talk more shit about pussy? Or something
tell me,
else?
Tell me the tea about New York. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, you want me to spill the tea on NYC? What is going on? Well, it's hot. It's sweaty. Mm-hmm. There's still a decent amount of Black Lives Matter protesting going on, which is great to see. There's still people occupying City Hall.
There are.
Yeah. Yep. There's been a lot more arrests and kind of police violence happening.
Did they arrest de Blasio?
Bill de Blasio is in the guillotine. We found out he's full of cake. Just kidding. That's a Marie Antoinette joke.
Mm-hmm. I saw it on Instagram.
Yeah. I stole it from the internet. What else is going on? Nothing much. I'm going upstate tomorrow to see my friends Alexis and Kyle and their kiddos. It was funny. I walked to the Union Square Farmers Market today and I texted my friend Alexis. I was like, hey, do you want me to bring you anything from the farmers market? And then I realized, like, I'm just going to the farmers market to buy vegetables from upstate and then walk 5 miles back to my house with them and then just bring them back upstate.
Yeah. Take them back to their home.
Hi, I'm bringing you. Yes, exactly. It's a lost vegetable rescue program that I'm involved in.
All those kidnapped vegetables, they have to be taken back to their home.
Exactly. A lot of people are coming under fire. As we know, restaurant owners are being put on blast left and right.
Yeah.
So that's happening. Lots of outdoor dining, which continues to make me feel sad for everybody
involved. It's so interesting that, first of all, I'm proud of the New York restaurants and how scrappy they are. They have to be, but mm-hmm. they're just like, they had the last minute notice that this is going to happen. And then they all just like built wooden decks in the street for their customers, which is crazy.
It's wild. It's very weird to watch.
They're temporary. So like they're not permanent. I don't know. It's just so strange.
It's so strange. Plus I keep just thinking, like, how much do some of these fucking decks take to make? Like, well, a couple $1,000s, including most the labor.
Most of them are doing it themselves. One person, there's also a bunch of stuff going on with the department of the people that get mad about your plants being far away from the street. What are those people? Consumer affairs people?
Oh, I don't know.
Whatever. The people that
Scully and Mulder?
The people that give you a fine for this, essentially. So they sent out these specs and you had to basically take a picture and send it to them and then you get approved. But everyone's complaining on the bar owner email chain that I'm on that they keep getting cease and desist letters. They keep getting secret visits and then they keep getting fined. And it's just... basically, they're going around to each individual thing, and if it's not up to perfect spec, they're making them pay fines. So
that's like this great.
Really screwed up thing because they only had like maybe a week's notice that this was even going to be the way that it was going to go down, and then they're just hammering together boards. It's just crazy. It's crazy.
It is crazy. I agree with you. I respect people. Listen, it's as you and I personally have discussed many times. It's a very complicated situation for everyone. I'd say the majority of people are well-intended and trying their best. And that goes from the customer to the owner. And well, in a lot of cases, people are really just trying to scramble to figure out what the fuck is going on and save people's jobs and their own businesses. And I think that the intention, even among customers, even when they're like, you know, seem ignorant, is probably pretty well-meaning. But it is very weird to see because it's so temporary. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen from one day to the next. The amount of money you can make in these little outdoor spaces is, like, nothing combined to what it's like to actually, you know, be operating a restaurant, which you're already probably not making money at. And you're spending money on this stuff. You're now, now learning you're getting fined. It's just, like, and then what happens in November when everything it's just sad. It makes me feel sad.
Well, it's just really sad that the way that the world is set up is we no city, even New York, which, like, through the basic necessity of having so many people living in a space, has more protections for people than other cities, still has absolutely no infrastructure or idea how to help in this situation. And so we get this, which is just, like, it's just ridiculous. And it's kind of pathetic. But speaking of the New York government, have you seen the Cuomo poster? The new one?
No. Mm-mm. Is he shirtless with his nipple rings revealed?
No. So I saw this on Instagram and I sent it to my friend. I have, like, a text group friend thing. And I was like, have you guys seen this poster? Yeah, go to his Instagram.
Okay.
And I was like, have you guys seen this poster? Because this is crazy. And my friend was like, yeah, he's actually done a couple of these posters. They're like old-timey propaganda posters. And if you're not familiar with those, even if you are, you're like, this is insane. It makes no sense. What the hell is going on here?
Wait, this one that says New York Tough, Smart, Unite with the Mountain?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Do you see the Winds of Fear there? That's my favorite part.
Yeah. And the Days of Hell?
So this is like a poster for the coronavirus, I guess, and how we were New York tough about it. So I encourage everyone listening to please check it out on his Instagram. Right. It's also, they talked about it in the New York Times.
It's shocking. And the Donald remarkable. Trump, who looks like a teenager sitting in the moon.
Mm-hmm. He's saying it's just the flu.
Yeah,
I've studied this extensively.
That, huh? Wow, this is really weird. This
also,
is bizarre.
Okay, so a couple of other tidbits that I think are kind of crazy is that they said in the New York Times, do you see boyfriend Cliff up there near Trump?
Hang on.
Boyfriend, it's right by the Cliff? Car. There's a little car.
God, you know this so well. Oh, yeah, boyfriend Cliff. What is that? Is that a place that I could go to find a boyfriend?
According to the New York Times, it's allegedly his daughter's boyfriend's, like, hanging on for dear life. I don't understand.
What?
That car
this
is one
too
of,
personal.
One of Cuomo's muscle cars, because he's a muscle car guy.
Where are his nipple rings on this whole thing?
I mean, Cuomo, like, designed it, but an actual artist...
He
made
designed it? When?
Yeah.
Doesn't he have to govern? Who's got the time to make this thing? This thing's crazy.
He woke up in the middle of the night with the poster. The first poster, he woke up in the middle of the night and drew it all in a fever dream.
Wow, I'm speechless. I don't actually know if I like it or hate it. I'm unsure
it's
how
a real,
I feel about this.
It's fascinating. It's really...
It's a puzzler.
Yeah. Hmm. You should read the New York Times article because it talks about his inspired by an old-timey... like running for office poster from somebody else. I can't remember any of the names.
Okay, I will do some more investigating in this. I don't see any people of color. Oh, mm-hmm. One black person. Great job, Cuomo. Fucking idiot.
Yeah, he's
is there
a dumb
fucking
dumb.
Octopus in this thing? There's an octopus.
Yeah, there's an
here.
Octopus in this one and the one before, but the one before that,
oh,
it's a three-headed sea monster, so. You know,
I am concerned for his mental state. That's like, yeah, he's gone full Chevy Chase in Christmas Vacation.
Also, New York tough to me is insulting. Like, what? I don't doubt that this guy had a hard time of it, but it was a lot worse for so many other people. And for him to be like, we made it through this because we're New York tough is insulting to me.
Yeah, I mean, we just made it through because so many people got sick. Eventually, like, everyone got sick and that, you
yeah.
know what I'm saying?
We like, killed everyone that was vulnerable to die, and so now we're fine. My
great
sister
job.
Is...
We killed, yeah.
Then coming back next week, as you know.
Yeah.
And my sister is coming with me, and she was not going to come with me because she was worried about going to New York. And I'm like, oh, no, it's safe to go to New York now.
Yeah. Safest city in the world. That's just like when Rudy Giuliani made New York City the safest city in the world by arresting all of the black people and saying that they're criminals. And
yeah, you know, I'm just like, we killed everyone already, so
right. That's how we make things safe. We just kill people and throw them in jail.
Also, it is so. You know, in New York where you are and Indiana where I am, which luckily Indiana hasn't had a spike, although I feel like it might be coming. It was very scary to be in New York during that time. Like, so what people are experiencing in Texas right now, I don't know if it's maybe different because it's been around for so long, but it was very, very scary to like leave the house and like touch things and go to the grocery store. And, you know, it's very scary now to think about how it's happening in other states and how it's just gonna, like, my friend had a friend come visit him from New Orleans in New York, and he was like, when they were on the plane, they said, they were like in midair and they're like, New York just changed its rules, so you have to quarantine now because you're in one of the states that New York says if you come here on a plane you have to quarantine.
Oh my god.
Yeah, but they're not making people who drive in quarantine. Like, I'm driving in from Indiana. I mean, Indiana's not on the list of quarantine states, but, you know, they're not monitoring all the people that are just driving through the Holland Tunnel.
Well, yeah. That would be really difficult to do. Almost impossible.
Right. So, like, but that's the point. It's like people are still coming in from other states.
Right.
That are infected, right. And it's just going to start all over again, and it's never going to end.
I know. Well, not until everyone has been killed off. And that brings us to our topic today, which is related to what we're talking about, road trips.
Yeah.
Road trips. Nicole, woo! You've gone on a lot of road trips, haven't you?
I love road trips. But when I drive from New York to Indiana, it's not really a road trip. I'm like in it to get there and like not stop and not do any sightseeing. Although on the way here, this most recent time, I did make my cousin, who volunteered to drive from Indiana to New York to come get me, I made her stop in Ohio at a lake so that we could dip our feet in the lake.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I do love a water feature.
Oh, yeah, water feature is wonderful.
So I am going to talk about Route 66.
Hell yeah! Get your kids, bitch!
The world's oldest road trip road.
Awesome. I'm so excited.
Okay, so Route 66 is also, in addition to being a roadway, is a Kmart clothing brand. And I used to own many Route 66 like t-shirts that would say Route 66 on the front and have like an American flag. And when I was in middle school.
Okay, you're a little baby patriot.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, like, you know, it was like, I just wanted a t-shirt with, I wanted a graphic tee, and that's what they had at Kmart, okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
There's also a song called Get Your Kicks on Route 66, which was featured in the Route 66 commercials for the clothing line.
Oh, who does the song?
Well, Nat King Cole does a song that I listened to today, but I actually don't know if he wrote that song. So look it up, people.
Okay. Yeah, figure it out. What do you think we're here for?
Yeah, sorry. I just had to slapdash this together a little bit because I was babysitting today unexpectedly.
No problem.
So the, it is one of the most famous roads in the United States of America. One of the most famous. I don't know what the other ones are.
What is like another famous road? I guess like the PCH is famous.
What else?
The Pacific Coast Highway. That's the only other really famous road I can think of.
And like,
and of course, the LIA.
Route 1 down the East Coast is like, I guess, famous? Famous is a weird word
to talk
about.
That's a great route.
Or a road. I know, it's great. It's also called Will Rogers Highway or the Main Street of America.
Oh.
Yeah. It was established on November 11th, 1926. And it goes from Chicago to L.A., so I bet people east of Chicago were like, not my main street, because they weren't. They weren't on it.
Not my main street, not my problem.
In the novel, The Grapes of Wrath, maybe you've heard of it.
Yes. Fabulous. Famous novel.
Highway 66 symbolizes escape and loss.
Oh.
Think about that, okay?
I'm head scratching.
It was the primary route for those migrating west during the Dust Bowl in the 30s. And then it, you know, it had its heyday. It was the route that you went on. People wrote a song about it. Everyone was like, thank God I can finally drive from Illinois to Los Angeles. And then in 1985, they removed it from the highway system because the 80s are when we decided to dismantle America in every way possible.
Whoa, wait, so there's no more Route 66?
So essentially, it's not in the highway system because so many new, like, interconnecting roads. You know how if, like, you're driving across the Midwest, for example, like, there'll be highways connecting each other, or you can do, like, the old roads on the side. It's like the big highway system sort of took over. So,
right.
Yeah, so in 1985, it was removed from the highway system, but there is a historic Route 66 that runs through Illinois, Missouri, New Mexico, and Arizona. So, like, the old roads are still there. It's just not as connected as it was before.
Got it.
And they're also currently redeveloping it into a bicycle route, because it actually did, and for the most part, it kind of did go through the main streets of America. So this is also why when I go on a road trip, I kind of like to stay off the highways and just go through the old roads, because you get to drive through all the what's left of the old-timey main streets in all the little towns that you drive through. That have been gutted and destroyed by NAFTA. So it's really nice to see the old crumbling shells of what used to be. I mean, you know, obviously, like, I don't want to mistake myself for, you know, a Make America Great Apart. I know that those old main streets were very racist, but, you know. Moving on.
But it's still nice to say.
They're turning it into a bicycle route, which I think is very cute.
And yeah, that is cute.
Links back to another episode where we made fun of our friend.
Yes, I was just thinking about that.
If he'd been able to stick with it, he could have gotten on that Route 66 bicycle route.
Oh, our friend Ryan, who rode a Rascal scooter through part of the country.
I'm interested to learn more about this United States bicycle route, because I suspect that you probably are still very likely to get hit by a semi-truck on it, but who knows?
Yeah, that's obviously doesn't appeal to me, since I have not ridden a bike since age 16, but I do think it's cool for others.
Yeah.
Would you do it? Would you ever ride across country?
Well, yeah, I probably would. I would stay in little motels. I mean, camping, I'm fine. I was just talking to my friend about this. I'm fine with camping. I don't love camping. I don't hate camping.
I feel exactly the same way. You know what the thing with camping is that I don't like the actual, like, sleeping part of it. Like, mm-hmm. I love all the rest of the stuff that goes along with it, like the cooking food on the fire, obviously telling spooky stories. don't love frogs jumping into my tent, as I'm afraid of frogs, so that does not work for me. But as I don't like sleeping on the ground.
That's it's the thing. I mean, I'm like a sensitive sleeper, so it's hard for me to sleep on the rocky ground. And then also, this happened to my friend who never camps. I was like, oh, you guys were camping. I'm like, did you put your tent under a tree so that you don't have to wake up so early? And he was like, no, girl. He was like, I woke up at 8 a.m. and I was like, I can't breathe. Because, you know, the sun just cooks your tent and it becomes like a little oven. But then if you put your tent under a tree, bugs fall on it all night. There's like a lot of bugs. I camped a lot when I was a kid. We were camping when I was a kid, and a rainstorm happened, and wherever the tent was, the tent just filled up with water. So we were like, my mom and my sister and I, my little sister and I were little kids, and I had my strawberry shortcake sleeping bag, and it got completely soaked because the tent was just like filled with an inch of water, and that was not fun.
That sucks. I have a camping story I'll tell you later though, from a road trip that I took.
So of course, naturally, a lot of the diners along Route 66 are no longer in operation, probably compounded by COVID. But it was once a place where, like, business flourished, and it was where you could have your little, like, Main Street diner, but if it was on Route 66, you got a lot more customers, obviously, because it's a main thoroughfare. So there's a couple of places that are still left, and it's really cool. They've been on the historical record. So you should look it up if you're interested. There's like some hotels. There's the U Drop In with the letter U Drop In.
Oh, that's cute.
There's a couple of places called like the Wigwam, which is probably not cool anymore, but they're really old and they're still there. And yeah, just like those little roadside hotels and diners. But I just got a compilation of, according to some person on the internet, delish.com, the best places to eat along Route 66. So we have the Cozy Dog Drive-In in Illinois that was established in 1949. Still there.
Cool.
We have Leroy's Highland, which is in California and was established in 1976. So does it really count? I don't know, but seems pretty cool.
We can count it. I'll allow it.
There's the Big Texan Steak Ranch, where, in the fashion of the great outdoors, you can, if you can eat a 72-ounce steak, a shrimp cocktail, a baked potato with butter, sorry, baked potato and a roll with butter in under an hour, you get it for free.
I could do that. Wait, how big is the steak?
72 ounces.
Oh, no, I can't do that. I can only eat, like, 3 bites of steak. The rest of it I could do, though.
My nephew's favorite movie right now is The Great Outdoors, so I have been rewatching it over and over and over again.
So good.
Great movie. There's also...
Great summer movie.
Do you what?
It's a great summer movie.
Definitely. There's also Jig's Smokehouse in Oklahoma. The Westside Lilo's Cafe in Arizona, famous for their giant cinnamon roll. And another Illinois... A lot of these places are in Illinois. The Chili Parlor. It's simply called the Chili Parlor. But they have chili mac. Do you know what that is?
No, but I should, since I'm on an all-chili diet. Yeah.
That's like... I don't know if it's Midwestern, but it's like Skyline Chili. Basically, it's when you put spaghetti. Like, you serve the chili on top of spaghetti.
Yep, I've heard of that. Yep.
Yeah. And that's my story.
Route 66! That's cool. Well, I might be taking a cross-country road trip soon, so I will try to take a Route 66. And let's take a quick break so Amanda doesn't hate us.
Right.
Back right after these thrilling messages from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2 Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we're back. Hi.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi. Oh. So, I have a story today that is very much entwined with your story. I think they're great companion pieces to one another. Now, I briefly heard about this story when we did a fried chicken episode. I think it was like episode 2 or 3, and Breton did the story of Colonel Sanders, which I feel like if we were to revisit now, there'd be a lot more. I can't imagine Colonel Sanders was a great person, although that is just I don't have anything to back that up, but just judging by the suit and the mustache.
There was no sordid trivia that you guys dove into during the...
He didn't mention it, but that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. So anyone with facial hair that looks that way and a thin, thin tie and a seersucker suit...
Is he really a colonel? Is he like a stolen valor guy? Is he lying?
No, he wasn't a colonel, but he was a liar. He was a goddamn liar. So listen, I'm not talking about him today, though. I'm talking about someone else who was brought up briefly during that episode, a man named Duncan Hines. Yep, that's right. The same Duncan Hines from your very favorite cake mix. I will say, I do like cake mix, and I fully believe in it. And people might be shocked to hear that, but it makes perfect cake, so.
No, it's great. My cousin, or my nephew just had his birthday, so we made a chocolate Duncan Hines Devil's Food cake.
Yeah. Was it great?
It was delicious. We were going to put, he decided he went strawberry frosting. It's really actually very hard to find strawberry frosting in a jar nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Which I think is a human tragedy.
It truly is. Strawberry frosting is delicious. But I want to begin with a joke, obviously. And okay. Don't worry, it's not going to be funny. a penguin was taking a summer road trip in the American Southwest when his car broke down and he got to the nearest auto body shop. The mechanic told him it would take an hour to check his car. Sorry, my computer just shut up. So the penguin waddled across the street to an ice cream shop and ordered a vanilla cone, which made a huge mess of himself because he See? Has flippers. What?
I'm just saying they're messy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes, penguins, of course. You're always saying that. They're very messy.
No, ice cream cones.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Both of them. Together, it's a disaster. After about an hour had passed, he waddled back to the auto body shop, and the mechanic said, "Welp, looks like you blew a seal." And the penguin said, "Nope, that's just ice cream."
That actually is kind of funny.
It's maybe the best joke that I've told yet on this show, honestly. I got my sources today were an NPR story by Nicole Janikowski, a MASH.com article by Deborah Kelly, and a Savor article by Todd Coleman. And here we go. Okay, Duncan Hines was born in 1880, so he's extremely old by this point. He would be 140 years old.
He's 140 years old?
He's 140 years young, Nicole.
Oh, okay. So he's definitely in, like, the lizard Illuminati then, I guess.
Exactly. Vampire! Duncan Hines was born in 1880 in Bowling Green, Kentucky. He was one of 10 children. Ouch. Unfortunately, only 6 of the children survived past infancy, and his mother died when he was 4 years old. So life for Duncan Hines did not start off great.
Everyone had a lot of children back then. That was like...
That's true. And most of them perished.
Yeah,
early.
You have like a bunch of them, so that when half of them die of whatever living you still have some left.
Right.
Bowling Green is not far from here, by the way. It's like 3 hours away.
Oh, well, you should go because there's actually a Duncan Hines Memorial Highway, and you can go graffiti it because he was a piece of crap, as you'll later find out down the line.
I can't wait.
His father served in the Confederate Army, so this is some foreshadowing. And he couldn't care for his family after his wife died, so he sent Duncan and one of his brothers to live with the maternal grandmother. And this is where he kind of learned to like food. He was quoted as saying, "Food is something just to fill the hollow space under my ribs. Not until after I came to live with my grandma Duncan," which I think is weird that his grandma's name was Duncan. So I'm assuming that like back then his parents just named him from the mom's maiden name and then his dad's last name.
That's a common...
I don't know what all the other kids were named, though.
It's a common thing for the maiden name of the mom to be the name of one of the children.
Okay, well, that's...
Or the middle name. Mm. It's a pretty WASPy thing to do, but I guess they did it during the Civil War, too. Who knows?
Yeah, any racists just adopted this practice. I came to live with my grandma Duncan. Did I realize that how wonderful cookery could be? She made things like apple pie, pecan pie, country ham, candied yams, turnip greens with fat back... and beaten biscuits and cornbread.
Is she still... Sorry, where is Grandma Duncan? Is she still in Kentucky?
Yeah, she's in Kentucky as well.
Okay.
Just down the way. So he was also a bad child. He had a fascination with trains and trying to fuck them up, according to Louise Hatchett, who is his biographer. Yeah, so check this out. He caused at least one major train accident when he was a kid because he built a snowman on the train tracks and the engineer of the train slammed on the brakes so fast that it caused a huge accident. I don't think anyone was killed, but it made all the cars uncouple.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This is like the equivalent of like torturing cats present day when you're young, and that's how you know you're going to be a murderer.
Exactly. 100%. Right? Being dropped on your head, bedwetting, and torturing animals. So this was the 1800s version of that. So he went on to kill about 350 sex workers. No, we don't know if he murdered anyone, but we can assume he did.
Yeah.
So from the 20s to the 40s, he was a traveling salesperson, and he would sell
That's the perfect job for murder.
I know. Actually, I hadn't put these pieces together, but you're absolutely right, Nicole. He was a murderer. Hmm. I'm saying this with 100% certainty. Come at me, Duncan Hines Estate.
Armchair sleuths, get together. Maybe he's the man from the train. You know, that book about the...
Oh, shit. Yep. Interesting. Wow. I can't believe we're cracking this case. This is blowing my mind. So he went across the country murdering people and selling letter openers and paper clips, which a letter opener is a murdering tool. That's a murder weapon. Yeah, and a paper clip, too. If you stab someone enough times with it, could kill them.
Yeah, death by a million paper cuts. I didn't know that they had paper clips in the 1800s. This is blowing my mind.
This is in the 1920s. 1920s through 40s. So this is when he's, like, an adult.
Right.
So there wasn't, like, anywhere good to eat, and this was way before there was any kind of rating system. Like, you couldn't obviously check in on fucking Instagram and see what kind of cool restaurants were around you where you could get a drippy ice cream cone.
Let me actually, this is good, because I was originally going to do... I was trying to find something that, like, planes, trains, and automobiles were worth trying to do. But I did find that before dining cars were a thing, that people who traveled on trains just had to, like, eat at whatever they had at the depot. And it says in the Wikipedia article that what they had at the depot was typically rancid meat. So ooh, nobody wanted to travel on the train because that's what you had to eat on your trip.
All you could get was rotten meat. Like, imagine being so hungry that you're like, for like a day trip, you're like, I guess I'll get the rotten meat.
I mean, it's really interesting to think about the fact that there were not restaurants back then. So, yeah. So when you hear someone be like, there was nothing good to eat, I just am like, yeah, right. But it was true.
It was true. Well, so he, like, there were restaurants, but, like, it was impossible to know where they were, right? They weren't listed on maps. You would just have to rely on, like, word of mouth. And in the early 1900s, or I guess beginning in 1900, Michelin had started, the big tire man had been, like, in Europe. But in America, there was nowhere that you could find out how to eat anywhere if it wasn't in your town. Or you didn't know somebody in that town. So it was a problem for a lot of people. So many restaurants were not listed on maps, and they were often hidden on dusty back roads and didn't have any health inspectors because health inspectors weren't a thing. Hence the rotten meat. I guess there was rotten meat other places than just at the train station.
Yeah, so just get the cottage cheese, you know?
Exactly. Just get a thing of Pringles. Keep it safe. So he carried a tiny journal with him, and he would, like, jot down everywhere that he went because he was traveling around the country so much. So he was like, oh, I should, like, remember where this is, and I can tell other people. And that's when he came across Colonel Sanders selling fried chicken at, like, a gas station or something. And he was the one who, like, made Colonel Sanders' career because he put it in what I'll tell you about later, his, like, book that he wrote about where to find good food.
Oh.
So he also, like, he was really, like, picky about health and safety. And so he was like, the kitchen is the first spot I inspect in an eating place. Most people will die from a hit or miss eating experience and from a hit and run from driving.
Was that true in the 1920s?
I guess, yeah. I guess there was either a lot of deaths by botulism or not a lot of deaths by hit and runs or both.
Interesting.
Yeah, so then he writes a book called Adventures in Good Eating, which really puts him on the map, pun intended. He would frequently pop into the kitchen to scrutinize how the staff handled the food, and then would go into the back to investigate the restaurant's garbage pile, which, like, reminds me of some customers at Bruce H.
An original asshole.
Yeah, like the first fucking jerk off to ever pop his head in a restaurant kitchen and look around.
And then what if he didn't like what he saw? Would he just leave?
Yeah, he would leave. And he would write a bad review. I don't think he put really bad reviews in there. Maybe he would just, like, you know, gossip about it. I'm not sure. He definitely wouldn't put it in his book, that's for sure.
Okay, like, so it was, like,
bad places.
Not like Yelp.
It wasn't like Yelp. Come to think of it, I think he made some critiques in his book, but I think if he didn't like a place, he just wouldn't. It was about including the good places to tell people to eat. Yeah. So he meticulously recorded the names of the most pristine diners, the inns with the tastiest prime roast beef, and where to find the stickiest honey buns, which sounds great. I love a sticky bun. The stickier, the better. That's what I say. he noted if they had air conditioning, the prices, blah, 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 blah. His notes were very accurate.
This is cool.
Yeah, it is actually really cool. And he became the most trusted person in food. So essentially, I mean, he's becoming the very first restaurant critic and creating the first kind of network of how to find restaurants. And in effect, making restaurants like a place where people out of town could actually go and find. And you know what I mean? Like creating the kind of restaurant frenzy we have today. So he began all that.
The restaurant frenzy. But also, I'm assuming that he was only going to white restaurants.
I mean,
or white.
I don't know. To be honest, I don't know the answer to that. I guess we could make that assumption, but I don't know that because I haven't read the book, so I have no idea. I tried to look up like Duncan Hines racist, Duncan Hines asshole. I did find. I'll tell you about a bunch of awful things that he did, but there was nothing that I could firmly find to say that he was racist. But I think we should assume he definitely was racist because he looks like a racist, and his dad was fought in the Confederacy. He's from Kentucky in the 1800s, so I'm sure.
Right.
He doesn't sound like a great guy, honestly, as you'll come to know. So as word spread among his family and friends, people were begging him to share his list. So he would share his list with people as they would like pester him, starting in like about 1935. He sent out a little blue pamphlet of all the restaurants that contained 167 restaurants across 33 states and sent them out as like in a Christmas card that he could safely recommend. Again, he's really into like food safety. He probably got a lot of diarrhea.
Germaphobe. I think he's just a germaphobe who, yeah. This is also another serial killer element, right? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. okay, so he wrote elsewhere, not in his book, but he wrote elsewhere that he would like to, quote, would like to be a food dictator of the USA, serial
sure.
killer. Just as long enough to padlock 2/3 of the places that call themselves cafes or restaurants. As one writer put it, his reviews were chatty, self-important, marketing-friendly. If he lived today, Duncan Hines would be the most famous food blogger. So, yeah.
Ugh.
He sounds like a real piece of shit.
Also, germaphobes. No, sorry, but just like, I have a problem with people that are germaphobes and like think that you're going to die of food poisoning because of the way something looks. It just like, he... probably would have. I'm glad that he wasn't the most famous blogger. I'm glad the internet didn't exist so that he couldn't padlock those restaurants. Sure, maybe some of them did give somebody botulism, but
some of them didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, agreed. I'm not, you know, we should do an episode on the health code rating system. Cause
oh yeah.
It's actually really racist and fucked up, and it's terrible. Let's talk about that next week. In 1936, at age 55, Hines self-published the first edition of his book, Adventures in Good Eating, and sold them for $1 each. They contain the names of 475 restaurants from coast to coast that he had approved, and the books were sold by word of mouth and quickly sold out, so the following year, he raised the guides to $1.50, and they would stay at $1.50 for the next 25 years, which is pretty
wow.
crazy. I know. He didn't go to all of the restaurants by himself, and he got like a group of people that he would call diner detectives, and they were friends and strangers that included the inventor of Southern Comfort, who would serve dinner on gold dishes that once belonged to the Tsar of Russia.
What?
So, like, we're getting a little bit of definitely uppity. So what you're saying, like, he definitely, obviously, right, he went to the gas station to eat fried chicken. He's not just eating fancy stuff, but the people who are his diner detectives... Again, we'll come to find out in a few moments about his elitism kind of inclinations. But so these are the types of people. Recommendations written by Hines's close friends, the Singmasters were so adroit. This is quoted from an article, obviously. And so attuned to Hines's own taste that they went into the books, no questions asked. At the book's height, Hines had 400 diner detectives working for him.
400 close friends.
Exactly. 400 really close friends who I'm sure are all white and rich. So he would order 11,000 copies of this book. And when it first came out and he distributed them himself, he lost money on the first two printings, but then he made money on the third printing. So anyway, it was like a huge, huge, huge deal to be in the guidebook.
What year was this?
This was in the mid-40s and early-50s. Okay. I'm sorry, the mid-30s to mid-40s and then on into the 50s. But it began in the mid-30s. So at the time, so he would print these like tin things, or people could print them themselves, and it would be like Duncan Hines approved restaurant. So he wouldn't like take any advertising for the book. Like you couldn't pay him to like get into the book or whatever, but you could buy this like sign. You know what I mean? Like having the sign in your window was the seal.
Sure.
And he charged people to use the seal. So it's kind of like backhanded.
What?
So like you couldn't give him money to get into the thing, but if you got into the thing and you wanted to put Heinz approved, you had to pay him.
Mm.
I know, it's crazy. And at the time, most families were making only $3,000 a year, which in today's money is $28,000. So, but for what he was making on cashing in for the sign thing, he was making $363,000 a year for selling the rights to display the sign.
Sounds like a scam.
He sucks. So then he like, as after this book became popular in 1938, he publishes Lodging for a Night and Adventures in Good Cooking, Famous Recipes, and the Art of Carving in the Home, which I don't know what that means, to be honest. So
the art of what in the home?
Carving in the home.
Carving?
Maybe like how to carve meat in your house. Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know. So this is where we start to learn what a shithead he is. This woman, Louise Hatchett, was his biographer, and apparently she claims that Hines was anything but nice, and she painted a picture of someone who's absolutely let the success of his books go to his head. According to the biography, he only hired secretaries that were attractive. His second wife divorced him, citing cruelty. He had one member of his family, who was his nephew, work for him for a short time, only to quit because of the abuse that he was suffering at his hands. And there's also a suggestion, and I don't know what this is based on, that Hines disliked a vast percentage of the people that he was writing about. And then he would only hire people that were already successful because he felt unsuccessful people, quote, absolutely couldn't be trusted. And during the Great Depression and the war years, there was heartbreakingly high percentage of the American population was unsuccessful because everyone was out of work, right? 25% unemployment. So anyway, he would take 3 months out of the year to like, basically he was getting so fat and full of butter and mayonnaise on the road that he would take 3 months out of the year to like detox and like from eating bad food. And he would eat fairly healthy, except for this, his favorite cocktail, which was gin, grenadine, watermelon pickle juice, lime juice, orange blossom honey, cream, and a whole egg. And he would drink over a dozen of them at a time.
Wowie. So was he an overweight man?
He wasn't like huge. He was like a bigger guy, but he was, you know, he wasn't like crazy big, but that's 12 eggs.
Yeah, I mean,
just in your drink.
Portion sizes were much smaller back then, so it was easier to be slim.
It's fucking crazy. So then, anyway, then comes, like, he forms, like, a company with this other guy. They formed the Hines Park Food, Inc. in 1949, and their first product was ice cream. He didn't know how to ever cook anything. He just put his name on it because he was, like, famous for a small amount of time. Their ice cream contained more butterfat than commercial ice creams, and then they made the cake mix, and it was so popular because they didn't use powdered eggs. They suggested that people put their own eggs in. So it became really like popular because of the not using powdered eggs, I guess it was better.
Oh, I'm looking up the old timey Duncan Hines cake mix boxes, and it's very cute and nostalgic.
It's cute. And so listen, 37 of the original 167 restaurants on Hines's 1935 list still remain, and I wonder if any of those are the same that you were talking about.
Oh my gosh, I wonder.
Yeah, and there's an article in Savoir by the person I just mentioned, by Todd Coleman, and him and another person go across country from Chicago to New York to try to eat at some of these restaurants, and it was a cool article. It's worth checking out.
It sounds really cool.
Yeah, and then he died of lung cancer on March 15th, 1959, 2 weeks before his 80th birthday.
Wow.
And, yeah, that's about it. That's Duncan Hines.
Wait, so the horrible stuff is just that he was mean to his nephew, and his wife said he was cruel.
Yeah, he was, like, cruel and mean, and he was an elitist. I mean, he only hired people to work for him who were successful, which is just, I don't know. He just sounds like a shitty... And then the rest of, like, the kind of other stuff I was just talking about, how he was the classic shitheady, like, toxic male, aggressive...
Yeah.
...successful guy, basically.
Yeah, he fits right in with people present day.
Exactly. He was, like, the Trump of road food. But anyway, I thought it was a really interesting story. And, like, despite the fact that he seemingly is a bad person, very interesting his contribution to restaurant society, restaurant culture, and to modern restaurants and how people view them. I mean, it's just a pretty big contributor that we don't really think of and we just see on a cake box mix name. But that's the real story. And I think it's actually very interesting.
I didn't realize that he was a real person because I thought Dunkin' was like a play on dunking stuff in milk.
Me too. Me too. Until Brent mentioned it in that fried chicken episode. But
There's a Daily Herald article that says Duncan Hines is a real person and kind of a jerk.
Yeah, exactly. He just sounded like a dick. Like there was nothing that, you know, they weren't like, and he was in the KKK, although he definitely could have been, or he was a murderer, as we've come to find out.
Yeah, I can't believe that we blew this man from the train wide open, and
he's the Black Dahlia murderer also, even though he was, like, 78 at that time. But, yeah.
That's funny.
So, question, what are your recommendations for, like, eating on a road trip?
I love to do a chip buffet. So what that means is you get three or more different kinds of chips and then you open all of them and then you snack on them.
You are the master of a chip buffet. What are your like go-to chips for a chip buffet on a road
trip? You gotta do a Funyun because I feel like a Funyun's not a chip that you really buy in your day-to-day. I mean, maybe some people do, but
yeah,
I don't usually eat a Funyun in my normal life. Then you get like, I feel like on road trips there's chips you don't see in your normal life, so you get whatever's fun. I usually get like a sour cream and onion chip and then just find whatever interesting chip, like when wrap snacks were happening, I definitely got those. And
wait, when what snacks were happening?
Wrap snacks.
What's that?
It's when wrappers were on the cover of potato chip bags.
Oh, I don't remember that. What kind of wrappers? What era of wrap was this? How did I miss this?
This is like in the last 5 years. They're still around.
Oh yeah, no, I don't remember that.
They're called Wrap Snacks. We are Wrap Snacks. Rich Homie Kwan, who I love. Mm-hmm. Although I think maybe, is he canceled? I don't know. Sorry if he is. They made a brand of chips called Wrap Snacks, and it has the wrappers on the actual chips, and they're kind of like, you know, regular chip flavors. Here, wait, the website has the flavors here. I'll let you know. The CEO is James Lindsay, born in 1994.
Oh, good man alive.
Man alive. But then now in my old age, that kind of makes me feel like bloaty and not happy. So my road trip snacks have changed. I actually, when I drove from New York to Indiana, I made a frittata and my cousin brought a bunch of food with her because we're thrifty. And so we basically just ate all the food that we brought with us. I do like to get a fountain soda on the road, though, like a, you know, 300-ounce soda.
Samesies. I was saying that before to the homies. We were in a group chat about everyone's... I'm going to read it off what everyone's favorite road trip food is. But that's a good point. Like, you don't want to feel bloated, and, like, you certainly don't want to be gassy on a road trip.
Yeah, you just don't feel great. And you're in the car. I mean, like, you're usually in the car for such a long time. Like, it's just... You just want to maybe... I mean, it's hard. It's also, like, fun to get fast food, even though it's increasingly disappointing. We went to, what is the place where you do the drive-in, kind of the old-timey, they have tater tots?
Sonic?
Yeah, we went to Sonic, and I was really excited to eat at Sonic. And it was just, like, not very good. I haven't
had... I've never been there.
I feel like the only good restaurant experience, fast food restaurant experience that I have anymore is, like, Taco Bell or McDonald's breakfast.
I haven't eaten fast food since I was a teen. Not because I'm being a snob. I just really haven't. I don't know. I just don't stop for it on road trips and I haven't had it. But I think if I took another road trip, I would maybe do McDonald's french fries dipped in a milkshake.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So some of these wrap snacks actually have really good flavors. So here's a couple. Barbecuing with my honey with a dab of ranch.
Ooh, nice.
With Migos on the cover.
Cool.
Hey, Migos are canceled. They are canceled, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think maybe Rich Homie Kwan's okay. I don't know. This is Cardi B Jerk Barbecue.
Nice.
Cardi B also has habanero hot cheese popcorn.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, white, she does.
White cheddar cheese puffs with a dab of ranch. I'm loving a dab of ranch, gotta be honest.
That sounds great.
Salty vegan maple barbecue.
No, pass. Hard pass on that.
Cheddar barbecue. Love.
I don't love barbecue chips. But they're not my first choice, but
I love a barbecue chip. I would definitely try this. Honey jalapeno cheese puffs.
Nah.
Another, this is Lil Boozy's Louisiana Heat. I'm into that. I like a hot chip.
Yeah.
White cheddar popcorn with a dab of ranch. Little Yachty's hot pepper and lime crunchy curls.
All right, I'll allow it.
Yeah, sour cream and a dab of ranch. Man, these chips are
ranch dabs, to be honest.
This Migos apparently loves ranch. It's always the Migos. Ooh, they got a cheese fry. Then they have a honeydew cheese puff, which I will not try.
Shut it down. That's it. No more.
Yeah. Anyway.
Question. Next. I want to actually mention. So I asked for people to write into the show and tell us what their favorite road trip foods and recommendations are. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to read them on the air quickly to you. These are all our buddies. Our friend Dan, they said that their favorite road trip snack is something I'd never heard of. It sounds great. Called Muddy Buddies.
Oh, you don't know about Muddy Buddies?
No, but they sound amazing, and I'm very excited because they said they would bring some to our next gathering.
Their version of Muddy Buddies, it's also called Puppy Chow.
It's like the Chex Mix that's filled with chocolate and covered in, like, powdered sugar.
It's peanut butter. You make, I mean, I didn't know you could buy them, but...
Yeah, they sent a picture with, like, that you could buy them.
I grew up eating that at Christmas time. You make them in your home. Mm.
So Muddy Buddies, theirs were Muddy Buddies, Snap Peas, Thin Pretzels, and Seltzer.
Okay.
Great choice. Becky McNeil was Corn Nuts, which seems surprising.
I don't like Corn Nuts.
Catherine O'Malley, I don't know if I've ever had them. Catherine O'Malley said beef jerky and goldfish. I've only briefly just recently tried beef jerky, and it was fine. I would allow it. And goldfish I'm lukewarm about.
What? I love them.
They're not dynamic enough for me. They're not very exciting. Mary O'Malley said sourdough pretzels, Arizona Arnold Palmer, and pistachios.
These people are insane. You're trying to eat a sourdough pretzel in a car? That's a mess.
Well, no. Those, like, no. Like, the sourdough pretzels that are regular pretzels, not, like, a hot pretzel.
No, I'm just thinking of those big, thick, fat pretzels that burst everywhere when you bite into them.
Oh yeah, there is a lot of crumbs. And then pistachios, obviously there's the shell issue. Bretton Scott, former co-host of this podcast, said pizza combos, which I know that you like. I am not interested in a pizza combo.
I'm into it.
I like the cheddar combos are fine. I find the pizza ones to be, like, oddly sweet.
Yeah.
And then he said Filet-O-Fish from McDonald's.
Wow.
Which Brenton will order a fried fish from absolutely anywhere. So that was also not surprising.
That's funny.
My go-to snack is a fountain cherry Coke and Pringles, sour cream and onion Pringles.
Pringles are great.
Love Pringles. Once you pop, you truly cannot stop.
That's the problem, yeah.
So, and then I wanted to know what your top three favorite road trip movies are. Do you have three?
Yeah, I saw this a little bit late, but I would say, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Home Alone.
That's a good road trip movie.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't think of that as a road trip movie, but it really is.
And then, I don't know, maybe I don't have a third, I guess, because I didn't have time to think of it, but... Maybe if you tell me yours, I'll think of a third one.
Okay. Mine are Thelma and Louise.
Very good.
Tu Wong Fu, Thanks for Everything.
Oh, and yes. And then also the road trip movie. The remake is also very good.
I didn't see the remake, but the original is incredible.
They're both good.
And Trains, Planes, and Automobiles was also on mine. How could it not be?
Right.
But there are some other good ones, like True Romance is an amazing road trip movie.
City Slickers, technically they're traveling on horseback.
Oh, yeah, that's road. True. They are.
I've been watching a lot of regular TV, so I've been seeing a lot of movies that are, like, on TV, which kind of is a cool experience because, as we all know, you get fatigue from just, like, going on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon because you have to pick what you want. You already have to have an idea of what you want. And when you have TV, it just, like, it's on. So you're like, oh, yeah, I'll watch City Slickers. So
totally. City Slickers is amazing. So.
Yeah. And then I've also, another road trip movie could be, like, The Fugitive, like, because he's on the run.
Amazing.
One more thing before we go. I know we're probably over time, but I don't know if it's a New Yorker cartoon or what, but there's, like, this stick drawing of this kid at a little table, and he has two little dolls in his hand, and one of them says, I didn't kill my wife, and the other one says, I don't care. And then he throws one of the dolls into a bucket of water, which is, like, that scene from The Fugitive.
Oh my god, I love The Fugitive. We do have to go, but I actually wanted to quickly mention something because I think in an effort to keep momentum alive and incorporate it in the rest of our lives read the Black Lives Matter movement. I just want to mention this week quickly GLITS, which is Gays and Lesbians Living in a Transgender Society. I will be donating for the next couple weeks a portion of the proceeds from all of the catering orders that come in for my little catering company to this organization. And since we're running out of time, I'm not going to read the full thing, but basically just a little bit from their website about who they are. We approach health. This is from the website about who they are. We approach the health and rights crises faced by transgender sex workers holistically using harm reduction, human rights principles, economic and social justice, along with a commitment to empowerment and pride in finding solutions from our own community. The first issue we address is the immediate need and crisis for support of transgender sex workers, including community members from the New York City area, across the U.S., and globally through supporting asylum seekers from our priority communities. The next issue we address is healthcare and health resilience for transgender sex workers, and they are raising a lot of money for housing for sex workers in New York City and beyond. So just wanted to shout that out and say that a portion of the proceeds will go to that.
Also, decriminalize or legalize sex work, for the love of God.
100%. We can get back into that next week. But just a quick mention, and this was a fun episode.
I had fun.
I had a great time. I might be going on a road trip this summer with our friend Dan. They are moving to LA.
Oh, cute.
So I might go with them. And then, I've always enjoyed my road trips. The biggest ones I've taken, I think, were just to go visit my dad. And then after he passed, to go back and forth from North Carolina. So I have a lot of experience with that leg of the country, but I'm looking forward to taking more road trips.
That's fun. Maybe I will come too. Yeah. Also, I thought about something that's really funny. It's not funny, but if there was, like, erotic fan fiction where Duncan Hines and Sarah Lee, like, get together.
Okay, you heard it here first, folks.
It's
if you want to write in your fan fiction, please send it to Life's a Banquet. And also send us your funny road trip stories or food. You can either DM me at zara.ray on Instagram or just DM the podcast, which would be better, which is Life's a Banquet Podcast on Instagram. And we would love to share some of your stories next week on the show or just, like, post them on our Instagram. It'd be fun. It's a fun topic.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Nicole, I love you. This was a great episode, and I hope you have a safe trip home on your road trip. And hasta la pasta.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Life's a Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.